This is Who's Talking on Fox Sports 910. Diehard Wahoo Frank Maloney and former Wahoo basketball standout Jim Hobbo Hobgood break down the Cavaliers each week by bringing you inside the game and behind the scenes of UVA sports with all-star interviews and unique insight that only Frank and Hobbo can provide. Who's Talking is brought to you by Ortho Virginia, LeClaire Ryan Law, TGI Fridays, Town Bank of Richmond, TheSaber.com, Richmond Allergy and Asthma Specialists, Hildrup Moving and Storage, Kelleher Heating and Air, the Virginia Athletics Foundation, Le Maire Restaurant at the Jefferson Hotel, Holly Martin Partners, and West Hampton Cleaners, with special contributions from Sarge Reynolds and Buford Scott. Now, Who's Talking is on Fox Sports 910. Here's Frank and Hobbo.
Good evening and welcome to Who's Talking. Frank here with Hobbo to my right.
Glad to be here. Wish the football circumstances were a little different, but it is what it is.
No two ways about it. Cavaliers played hard, had chances, had the lead in the third quarter. After a very nice long drive, and somehow the fourth quarter, unfortunately, was reminiscent of so many fourth quarters on the road in the last couple of years for the Cavaliers. And the
penalties, execution, things that...
Strange play calls.
Makes the difference between winning and losing.
Yeah, you've got to execute. Anyhow, such is life. Tonight we have a terrific show. Looking forward to Ryan Keel, former UVA defensive tackle. He was second team All-ACC, I believe, in 94. Played alongside Mike Frederick, who is a superstar at defensive end. Still in the top 3 to 5 in every major defensive statistical category for Frederick. And also there was a pretty strong, stout defensive tackle named Mark Krickbaum, played alongside Ryan. And, boy, teams had a hard time running the football against this unit.
Well, and as evidenced by the record during the years that Ryan was playing, he was in there, played on the team during George Welsh's 13-year stretch of having at least 7 wins per year. So
going to bowl games. And
happier days for Cavalier football.
Generally wreaking havoc on opponents. And, you know, in those days, the Wahoos were very sound fundamentally. That's one thing you always knew when you went to Scott Stadium or if you watched the Cavaliers on the screen, the TV, when you're at home or whatever.
Well, if they weren't sound, George would slam his hat down into the turf.
Well, he didn't let people get away with it.
No, he was.
It just didn't happen. If a player made a mistake, they'd pull him aside and get him straight, and they might not go back in for a while.
Yeah, come over and help coach. But this is a transition show. Not only do we have Ryan Keel in the first half hour talking football, but we've got a friend of the show and former Cavalier Dan Bonner, current TV analyst for Raycom, CBS, and others. He will be joining us at the bottom of the hour, and we'll talk a little basketball with the first game tipping off Friday night at 7 o'clock at JPJ.
Against Morgan State. That should be an interesting game for the Cavalier fans as they get reacquainted with basketball. And I think they might have a sellout in that game, despite the fact that it's November and football is in full swing still. But
well, there's a certain looking forward to basketball season at this point in time. Speaking of basketball and Who's Talking next Monday night, a week from tonight, we will do the show from Friday's Restaurant, Broad and Glenside. And the Who's play game number 2 that night at GW at 7:30. So we want all our listeners and friends to come out and be there for some or all of the broadcast stay and maybe get a little beverage, something to eat, and sit there and watch the Who's and the Colonials.
Recently, Friday's renovated and modernized that restaurant at Glenside and Broad, and it's really nice. We are looking forward to Bobby Call and Vince Dalton. They will both be participating in that show live and in person. We've extended invites to Uri Barnes and Mark Newland and Wally Rainier. We're trying to make contact with them. Uri has been on the show in the past. It is always entertaining. We hope to get Wally Rainier. It would be his first visit on Who's Talking, and boy, he could play football. It'd be interesting to get his perspective on the football program. But all right, let's set the table. Might as well knock out the LeClaire Ryan play of the game right now. For me, I think it's pretty easy. There in the fourth quarter, Virginia drove down to the inside the 5-yard line, you know, against the Miami Hurricanes, and threw a touchdown pass seemingly to Kanane Severn, who made a nice diving catch in the right quarter quadrant of the end zone. Alas, there was a flag. They called offensive pass interference on the tight end, Charlie Hopkins. And I have to say, watching it live and then watching the somewhat compromised replay had to be one of the worst calls I've seen in a long time. Tight ends, when they release up the field at the goal line, they always make contact with the linebacker or the safety. It's inevitable. He didn't do anything unusual. He didn't.
It's tight quarters, and you know that's one of the problems when things are not going well and you're losing. It's seemingly you get the difficult calls because, as you say, that was a huge call in a football game, wiping out that touchdown.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, the back judge and the head referee, they should have conferred and maybe gone to the monitor or something. That was inexcusable. It was a terrible call. The entire Virginia bench was up. The quarterback was in the face of the referee, asking him for a clarification, et cetera. Just one of those things you hate to see happen, but you know, you saw what happened at the end of the Miami Duke football game, and so the days of just accepting that nonsense, they need to end.
The Zebras haven't had a good couple of weeks here.
Horrendous. Anyway, we're delighted to have former UVA defensive tackle Ryan Keel on the line. Ryan, welcome to Who's Talking.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Pleasure to be with you.
Really good. And we wish there was better news to share on the football program front, but we certainly respect you calling in on time and joining our program, and hope you are doing well with Under Armour these days.
Yeah, it's doing great. Under Armour's we're doing real well there. Business is great, so we keep changing lives one athlete at a time. So we're excited about the possibilities of the future.
Well, I remember when Under Armour first came on the scene, and I wondered. I said, "Where are these guys from?" And somebody said they're from up near Baltimore and College Park, Maryland, and all that. And we didn't know much about them, but great, Scott. They really taken off and. Got to be impressed with those crazy uniforms that the Terrapins wear, one way or the other. But you know, I think on a serious note, high marks for Under Armour for securing the endorsement of Jordan Spieth in golf. I mean, what a home run that's been!
Yeah, we've been fortunate. We've actually had a great run. Our athletes from Steph Curry to Jordan Spieth, Tom Brady to Carey Price in the NHL, Clayton Kershaw, Bryce Harper. We've had a really, really good run of athletes this year. On the university front, yeah, I mean, we take pride in you know, really partnering with our institutions. And for Maryland, you know, they felt like they needed a jolt and to get on the map. And so they chose to do that with their football uniforms. We had a great partnership on that design. But then you flip it around in a school like Notre Dame, they want to stick, you know, they don't need a jolt, right? They're Notre Dame. So we stay very traditional with them and work with them on that to make sure we're still providing the technological advantage, but staying very traditional because that's how they view themselves correctly, I might add.
Ryan, I assume Frank gave you our sizes so you can send us a little gear.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We're very active in the sports community.
But
so,
anyway,
I'm not afraid to send some gear, that's for sure.
All right, well, as Frank said, we're visiting with former Virginia defensive tackle, great defensive tackle, Ryan Keel, and he talked about Mike Frederick on the other side. Go back to those days under George Welsh. You know, I referenced the fact 13 consecutive years where Virginia won at least 7 games. And, of course, back in those days, you only had an 11-game regular season, so it was even more impressive. What was the key to George's success back in your era?
Well, George was special. I mean, he. I think the biggest thing is I think back and, you know, playing the NFL a long time and being around other, you know, really good teams. I think the thing was at UVA we had and that sort of run, say from, you know, Georgia's really heavy run, we'll say 1988 to 1998-ish or thereabouts, whatever that 10-year stretch is. He got his kind of guys. You know, like I've told other people involved in the UVA community that, like, it's, we were all very similar mindsets. We were all hard work guys. They brought in good athletes. They molded players. They developed players. I mean, I remember my class in 1990. Kind of feel like one of those old guys talking about way back when. But you know, I think out of the 22 guys they brought in under scholarship, I think 9 of us were listed as tight end / linebackers. And I think one guy played tight end. And the rest of us turned into defensive end, defensive tackle, centers, guards, fullbacks, you know, whatever it sort of took. I think they just got their kind of guys, and they really built a culture around, you know, George was great, I think, with his Navy background of building a culture of accountability and you know, you pay your dues and work your way up and just like you would on a ship. And it was really a pleasure to play for and learn from and just a great group of guys that we all cared about each other. And it just was, we were focused on playing for UVA. You know what I mean, guys? It wasn't a step for us. It was, we announced when I played with Tiki and you know, later on the Giants and Charles Way and these guys, but we took great pride in playing for UVA and we cherished our time there. We wanted to win as many games as we could the right way and represent the university in the right way. And he really bred that into us. So for us, it was an investment. It wasn't just a step to the NFL, because most of us, quite frankly, were more interested in getting a degree and having fun and winning games than going to the NFL at the time.
You know, we neglected to mention the fact that Ryan played for the 49ers, Skins, Browns, and the New York Giants. But how many years did you actually play in the league?
12 years.
You know, I remember seeing you in some games, and I would, you know, elbow drop a couple of friends and say, check it out, there's a Wahoo. And they would say, who is he? And I said, I tell you what, he's a tough cookie.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I was lucky to play on some good teams.
Well, you played with a couple of roughnecks there in Frederick and Crickbaum. You guys, teams had a hard time running the football. You know, when I watched the Cavaliers in recent years, they seem, for the most part, in position, but they don't seem to move up the field on defense and meet the ball carrier.
Right.
And they're catching the running backs, and the running backs are sometimes break free, and it's very discouraging. I mean, you just go, you know, that's not what they're being taught.
No, those guys know how to coach. Well, the game's changed quite a bit. And one of the things I'm probably most proud of is our senior year there in 1994. I think we were number one against the rush in the country. We were number one in interceptions, and we were like eighth in scoring. And we had players from Percy Ellsworth to Rondi in the back to Potsy and Jamie Sharper and Randy Neal, and then the fat guys up front. But we really knew our defense. And when you play run defense, and I don't care, you know, nowadays they're throwing it so much. Maybe it's not taught like we were taught or as much as we were taught, because it's very technique-oriented. And it comes down to using your hands and creating separation so you can control the offensive lineman and then understanding what your responsibility is and, you know, having some sort of anticipation of where the ball carrier is going to go.
Ryan,
and
you say, not to interrupt, but you said the game has changed a lot. Is that what you're referencing, the number of passes now as opposed to when you played?
Yeah, the spread offense and that kind of stuff, they're throwing it all over the place, you know, which would have been fine for us. We would have just rushed faster more. But it seems now that, you know, the kids, and part of it is, you know, just the different generation. It doesn't make it bad or good, but, you know, sacks were important back when we played, but we always went into it saying, first you got to stop the run. And when you played Clemson back then and North Carolina and Virginia Tech and NC State even, you had to stop the run first. And they were probably running it, you know, 30 times a game, and maybe they're only throwing it 20, you know. And now that's probably flipped, you know, most games. So, you know, we felt like if we could stop the run, and I think even in the pros, when you can make a team one-dimensional, you know, you generally win those games. So, but the run game, it's understanding your gap and what you have in response, and then using your hands. And when I watch games, and quite frankly, I see it at the pro level too, to the guys just aren't using their hands as weapons and hands to control. They use them, more swinging and clubbing as opposed to controlling. And a good offensive lineman that you see in the ACC or the NFL or any of the big conferences, once you start, you know, exposing your chest, they're just going to get into you and move you around.
You know, one of the players on your defense that we've had on the show is Randy Neal. And I remember him vividly moving up and down the line of scrimmage and then breaking hard through a gap and just knocking the living daylights out of a running back. And so you guys would make penetration. And then you'd have Randy Neal busting through and wrapping people up. And, you know, it's so frustrating to watch, you know, these last 4 years. I mean, ever since the Chick-fil-A Bowl, it's been, quite honestly, painful at times, particularly for me. But hopefully.
Yeah, I think it's getting the right guys up front, and they got the right kind of athletic ability. And then the great thing when you get penetration up front is that you're declaring for the linebacker. So the linebacker doesn't need to guess, right? So if you're a defensive end or a defensive tackle and you get up the field 2 or 3 yards, that basically tells the running back he can't go that way, so he's got to put his foot in the ground and cut up. And the linebacker sees that too. So that's where you get the big hits and the big forceful tackles, because everyone's had to declare, okay, well, the running back's got to go to this hole.
Yep.
And once they do that, the linebacker knows it, and he doesn't have to worry about them going outside or whatever it may be. And when you play together long enough, and I know where I was just truly fortunate, I think all of us who played back in those times, but I mean, the guys we played with were just amazing players, and they're still, you know, cherish the opportunity to play for UVA. It's really made it special. But Randy and Jamie Sharper and James Ferrier and all those guys are just tremendous. So we were really stacked. But talent helps. There's no question about it.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. Listen, I admire David Dean and Mike Moore. They fight hard, but they seem to be about the only defensive linemen that can hold their own and exert their will on the opponent. But
I used to say talent was the key when I played basketball.
Well, I'm going to hold off, Hava. Thank God Parkhill was on that team. But anyway,
that's right.
I'm just kidding. Jim was plenty good shooter. Ryan, we've got about a minute before we go to break here. Talk to us a little bit about where you think the University of Virginia football program needs to go, and just in the most general terms.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in the broadest terms, like, I think we need to understand that it's not like it was back when I played, and that we are fighting for the fans, and we're fighting for the entertainment dollar, and we need to create an atmosphere in the stadium that attracts people to, you know, which then attracts players, which then wins games, and then attracts more people, and it sort of gets into this great cycle, if you will. And the idea of creating an identity and what that identity is, and then sticking with it. And it's an identity that I think we need our fans to be able to rally around. And I'm not saying I don't have an answer or anything like that, but to me, creating an identity and sticking with that, and then supporting that program and really creating a better atmosphere around the football team are probably two areas where I'd really attack. I mean, we've got, you know, Coach Beamer's retiring. We got an opportunity now to really take the state back.
Yes.
And we need to, you know, we need to get creative in that. It's not the same old stuff. It's not the same old sport, nor is it the same old state. I mean, you need to get creative and continually innovate how your program and how your product shows up on the field. And that's how I would, at least in my opinion, and I'm not saying Coach London's not doing it. I'm not trying to knock anybody at all. But from my perspective, like an identity, you can't, if you switch offenses, you know, a bunch, well, theoretically you're recruiting for that offense. Well, if you keep changing, then you got the wrong players.
Yes.
Right. So at some point we need to stick with something, and the same thing goes on defense. So I just think we have a chance now to take the state back and own the state, and the state's got great talent and it's got a great fan base, and you win doing both.
Yes.
All of a sudden people can go to your games and they have fun because you're winning games, and then winning begets winning, you know? So, There's a lot there, but as an old guy who was awfully proud of our run we had with Coach Welsh, you know, I was with another guy who played when I played last weekend. You know, we spent 15 minutes at a cocktail party talking about how all the work that these past years have put in to build it. We want to see it come back because you can do it. Like, it's not an impossibility. George did it. So it's not like this, like, thing, oh, my gosh, we can't do it at UVA. Of course we can. You know, we just got to get the direction and identity and then follow through on that.
Of course.
So I'm sorry to run over, but that's, no. I get a little passionate about
no, that.
Ryan, I think you just said something that every serious Wahoo fan and alumni has wanted to say, and we are glad that you said it.
Yes or no question.
Well,
have you ever thought about coaching?
No.
No.
No, I never did. I didn't want to get this. It's a tough gig for those guys. So I prefer to stay right where I am and do some good with athletes through Under Armour and support UVA as any way I can.
Well, obviously, you're having a great run with those guys, and we wish you the best of luck, and thank you for joining us tonight.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it. You guys have a good night.
All right, we're going to head to break. We come back. We're going to break down the upcoming ACC football schedule and tease Dan Bonner. So stay with us. This is Who's Talking.